this way, evading armed pursuers. Pausing at an intersection, he waited with the Sigsaur in hand to see if he was being followed. After a few minutes, he holstered the weapon and continued onward, squeezing through a short sloping tunnel made of brick, the purpose of which was lost in pre-dark history. Ryan emerged into a long hallway lined with closed doors, guest rooms. Overton and his personal troops had taken over the east wing, with the rest of his sec men billeted in the barracks, leaving the entire west wing empty and barren. At the end of the passage, Ryan eased open a heavy door and climbed another flight of winding steps higher and higher until exiting on a parapet, the stonework balcony curving gently from the side of the ville and overlooking the southern acres of farmland, pastures, and forest. Stepping onto the chilly parapet, Ryan spotted a dark figure in the shadows. The person stood as if hunched against a fierce wind, both hands tight on the stone railing cresting a low wall.
"Crops were good this summer."
The voice seemingly came out of nowhere.
"We'll last the winter without short rations. First time in years."
"Good news."
Ryan casually walked closer. The tension from the man was palpable, like heat radiating from a furnace.
"We'll be glad to help with the eating and the drinking."
Closing his eyes, Nathan didn't smile at the joke, and he tightened his grip on the railing.
"Look at that view."
He extended an arm. In the distance, the rocky Goliaths of the Shen Mountains of Virginia rose to challenge the sky, the slopes faintly bluish from the dense growth of Scotch pines and spruce trees.
"A thousand years ago, somebody saw the exact same thing, and a thousand from now, somebody will again. Mountains last forever."
"Unless they get nuked."
"True. Too bad your woman, Christy, couldn't be here."
"She is. Christy and Mildred, a friend, were only a couple of hours behind us. Christy had a fever, which broke shortly after we departed, and they arrived a little while ago. She's been in the dining room since midnight, eating everything not nailed down."
"A fever, you say?"
"She throws off these things quickly. Tough lady."
"Good. Good for her."
"Now let me tell you a little secret about my woman."
Ryan laid an arm across his nephew's shoulders and drew him closer.
"Okay. What the fuck is going on here?"
"I'm being replaced as Baron, and I can't stop the process."
"How?"
"We were attacked in the summer by muties, hordes of them. It was like a nightmare where you shoot a man only to find another behind him, and so on, endlessly."
"Swampies? We tangled with one of those coming here. Pretty tough. Had to head shoot the bastard twice."
"Swampies, yes. And stickies and scalies and a dozen more we have no names for. Waves of them."
"You're still here, so it couldn't have been too bad."
"A southern hamlet was attacked at night. The muties killed every man, woman, and child. A runner brought the word, and we galloped there on horseback with blasters firing, and every dog I have came along with us. The triple damn things had hatchets."
"Armed muties? Bullshit."
Wordlessly, Nathan pushed up his sleeve and showed a badly healed scar that ran from his shoulder to his elbow. He let the sleeve drop back into place.
"The blades were roped to their arms. The muties couldn't drop the weapons if they wanted."
Ryan remained silent. There was nothing he could say. A cool breeze was blowing in from the Shens, carrying with it the faint smell of the forest and the ville below. Wood smoke, horse dung, soap, tar, the smells of life. But there was also the stink of gasoline, the sounds of marching boots, the crack of a whip, and a prisoner's scream of pain. The music from the dining room didn't seem to reach into the courtyards of the ville.
"They were eating the dead, the living. You know muties."
"Thought I did."
"Me too. We went through the hamlet once and didn't find a soul alive."
"So you set fire to the place?"
"As your grandfather taught us to, yes. The muties went mad and attacked in a suicide rush. We slaughtered the things, but the horses got wounded. Dogs died by the dozens. We won, but what a loss of lives. Over half of my sec men got chilled that night."
Ryan knew where the story was going.
"The muti attack was a diversion, and the next day Overton arrived, posing as a mercy, and offered his services. Once inside the walls, his troops started to take over."
"Not quite, Uncle."
Nathan saying this meant that was exactly how it occurred.
Now we share the Vill, as I train him to be my replacement. He controls the walls and the food warehouses. My men control the dogs and the armory.
Controlling the walls meant Overton's troops had seized the front gate also, the only way in or out of the Vill. Nathan was a prisoner in his own fortress. It was a classic stalemate. But Nathan should have fought to the death to stop the invaders once he discovered their plan. When Overton finally took over, the first thing he'd do would be to chill Nathan and every loyal sec man. There had to be a reason.
Why? There's quarter blood in your veins, man. What's going on here? Why are you letting Overton take over?
Surreptitiously, Nathan glanced out of the corner of his eyes at the stained glass window nearby. The scene was of an armed hunter with a stag at bay.
Guess I'm just getting old. Happens to each of us. Even Red Roger. Remember him? Time takes us all down, Uncle.
Releasing his grip, Ryan did indeed recall Red Roger, and his gut tightened in suppressed fury. Fire blast. So that was the problem.
Perhaps you're right, nephew.
Ryan deliberately used the word to let the man know what he said next was a blatant lie.
Besides, Overton is my son. You can see it in the very way he walks. That man is Carter to the bone.
To the bone.
Ryan slapped the Baron on the back.
Well, enough politics. I'm off for some sack time with my woman. Let me know if you want to go fishing later on. Still lots of trout in the moat?
Nathan blinked in shock. Fish in the moat? Only minnows and sunfish not worth catching if you were starving. Then his face took on a neutral expression.
Certainly. Lots of them in our special hole. Think you could find it after so many years? What has it been, 12?
12.
Ryan brushed the wild tangles of black hair off his scarred face.
Later, nephew. Talk to you tomorrow.
In the morning, uncle.
Tomorrow.
As his uncle departed, Nathan took a cigar from his shirt and used a disposable lighter on the tip, puffing until it glowed cherry red. Taking a single draw, he then tossed the smoke away, watching the glowing cheroot tumble the 5 stories into the moat. It drifted slightly to the left from the wind. Baron Carter stood silent on the battlements, contemplating the dark waters below for several minutes, before Jian Hua Qi stepped from the shadows.
You did well, Nathan. The fool believed every word. I'm pleased.
With a snarl, Nathan spun and grabbed a fistful of the slim man's collar, bodily lifting him off the stone floor. The sec man began gagging and choking for air.
Please!
I'm Baron Carter to you. And if not for the life of my unborn child, I would wash this Vill with your blood and the blood of your stinking master!
Strangled gasps were the only reply. Nathan raised his right hand.
Do you understand me?
A brutal backhand punctuated the question. Blood flowing from his nose and mouth, Key nodded frantically.
Bah! You're not worth the effort to chill. I'm beyond caring.
The taste of blood filling his mouth, Key slunk from the balcony and hurried inside the fortress, closing the hallway door quietly. Going to his room, he inspected the damage in a mirror. There would be no scars, but the memory of being handled like a child, worse, like a slave, by an overseer, filled him with mortification.
That was the worst mistake of your life, Baron.
Key's mind was already working on the details of a fitting revenge. The dying light from the crackling fire threw strange shadows on the trees surrounding the small forest clearing. Green sticks supported a metal rod upon which hung the roasting carcass of a coney. The skin of the rabbit was draped over a tree branch, already scraped clean of tissues and dripping with urine as a preparation for proper tanning. Sipping a plastic cup of coffee sub, Daniel Lissman wrinkled his nose at the smell. Urine had a lot of tannic acid and was an excellent beginning for curing hides to keep them from going bad. In addition, it would help mask the smell of the kill and reduce the number of predators who might be interested enough to investigate. Resting his back against the rough bark of the pine tree, Daniel smiled in remembrance. This had been a very good day. Stopping at a ville to rest his feet, the healer offered his services to help deliver a breach.